the past couple of years as a music major, I have had a lot of chances to hear and study the music of Johann Sebastian Bach, and with every new note that I hear, I'm convinced that he is one of the most gifted musicians that has ever walked the face of the earth. During this special week of the Three Bs, which I'm calling the Epic Bach Week, we'll be focusing on several different aspects of the music of J.S. Bach, and every day we'll talk to a professional musician who is an expert in their field and who loves and is in awe of the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. I'm Robbie Rainey, your host, and this is the Epic Bach Week on the Three Bs. Today our subject is Bach the Keyboard Player. Good morning to you, and welcome to the Three Bs. When planning this week of music and interviews, I wanted to speak to someone who is one of the predominant experts in Bach's keyboard music, especially performing it in Bach's own style. We managed to catch up with Ton Koopman, who is the harpsichordist, organist, and conductor of the Amsterdam Baroque Orchestra. We caught up with him while he was at the Bach competition in Bach's own St. Thomas Church in Leipzig. Ton, so wonderful to get to speak with you this morning.
Yeah, of course.
You're known as a great supporter of performing Bach's music in a period style. Was that always the case, or was there someone that inspired you to devote your life to performance practice?
Yeah, it was very clear that the one who inspired me was Gustav Leonhardt. I became a student of his after my study in the gymnasium, and so he... He brought me in contact at first with the harpsichord without pedals.
How do you feel about musicians who use more romantic interpretations to Bach's music?
Now, you know, I don't want to be a policeman for anybody else. I can only be a policeman for myself and saying, this is my truth, this is what I believe, and if somebody else wants to do it different, it's their point. For me, to play Bach on the piano is not understandable. Because the piano is an instrument that didn't exist at Bach's time. To perform on clarinets or saxophones, the Kunstfuge of Bach, I mean, people can do it. But for me, it makes no sense because the original instrument is there. The harpsichord is there. So why not do it on a harpsichord? And that's the same for the piano. Of course, there are dull people playing on the harpsichord and there are extremely fine plays on the piano, and the other way around as well. But if we harpsichord players say that Bach's music is for the harpsichord, we should defend it well. It means that if there's a pianist who plays more beautiful than us, the slow movement of the Italian concerto, we should get a mirror and look in that and say, hey, is it really our instrument or are we just not doing it well? But anyhow, I think you should try. And for me, as my own policeman, I should read treatises, I should read about interpretation of Bach and music from the Baroque period, and not trying to want to be Johann Sebastian Bach myself, because it's not possible. We can be maybe a good contemporary musician from Bach's time, and let's hope that we would be allowed by Bach himself to play in his orchestra, to sing in his choir. And that means that we have to understand as good as possible his way of thinking about music, his way of thinking about music making, and the things which were important for him in his idea, his musical language.
You've recorded a good chunk of Bach's music. You've recorded all of his cantatas, and I think you've also recorded all of his organ music. Is that correct?
Yes.
What inspired you to go ahead and do that?
Now, you know, in the first place, I'm a collector. I collect old books. I collect old engravings. As a collector, you want to see the whole picture of the thing. And so for me to, when you don't talk about Bach, but in the Mozart year in 91, I performed all this Mozart symphonies in 10 concerts a few times. And it was so interesting to see a composer from being a little kid to the moment that he dies, but Mozart is very early. It was great to get to know pieces which you don't know. I mean, there's always a fair amount of pieces which you know. If the cantatas, I knew maybe a fourth of all the cantatas, which is not so bad. But now I know them all, and I mean, it made my life much richer to know that. And finding out that there is no weak point with Bach, I mean, that's almost painful for us normal human beings, but what a great music. And it's the same for the organ music as well. I have a little booklet when I go on tour, and I travel a lot, that I'm still looking for this book of that writer like Mattheson. I try to get Mattheson complete, and so on. I try to collect as much as I can, treatises about harpsichord playing, about flute playing, about all kind of things, nice manuscripts, nice editions. And yeah, that belongs to the collector Koopman, I think, to want to do it complete.
Let's turn now specifically to his organ music, and let's go to probably at least what I would call the most simple of his organ music, just the chorale preludes. Can you tell us a little bit about what a chorale prelude is and what its purpose would have been?
A chorale prelude is what I would call a piece played during the service, and when they're collecting money, and the audience being in the church is already getting the melody in their head by listening to a piece, which could be 3 minutes, could be 5 minutes. And then they are going to sing it after that. Very special, very nice to see what you can do with a chorale. You can turn it upside down. You can lengthen the melody. You can shorten it. You can add ornaments. You can make it from major to minor. Everything is possible. But the inspiration of the chorale is extremely clear and important.
Let's listen to one of Bach's chorale preludes, arguably his last. The tune is very appropriate for the end of his life. For deinen Thron tret ich hiermit. Before your throne I now stand. Gustav Leonhardt is the organist.
Thank you.
Gustav Leonhardt gave us that absolutely heartfelt performance of the chorale prelude Vor deinen Thron tret ich hiermit by Johann Sebastian Bach, BWV 668. Now, Bach didn't just write chorale preludes. He wrote many sets of preludes and fugues for both the organ and the harpsichord. Did he write these preludes to be an introduction to the fugue, or did he write them to be equal partners?
You know, with Bach, many of the preludes and fugues which we hear now on organ, we don't know if Bach ever made a combination of the two or somebody else did. We know some pieces, what we see in manuscripts, in earlier manuscripts, just one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And then later we see combinations. The service starts with a big organ piece, a prelude, the beginning,
mm-hmm.
Before. And at the end, either to go home with beautiful music in your head or to sit down in and be inspired by the great music played by Bach himself or by, in our time, by an organist. Then you see the fugue is the one to go home, to finish the service. If that was the way, then you can imagine that many more pieces were composed and maybe not combined and only later combined. Did Bach later add something to make a double piece? That's a possibility,
mm-hmm.
because often the fugues are much later than the first pieces. In the church services, it was normal that there was organ music before and after.
So, in case our listeners don't quite know what a fugue is, can you explain it to us in just a few sentences?
Yeah, there's a theme which starts in one voice or is sung by one part or one instrument,
mm-hmm.
and then the same theme comes in, sometimes 100% the same, sometimes with one note changed because of the harmony.
Mm-hmm.
That goes on. If it's a fugue in three parts, then you hear three times the theme coming in. It was a work of art to compose fugues, and the more inspired the composer is, the less that you hear from the construction, the more you hear of beautiful music. Where you could say, even if you don't want to know what's a fugue, what a great piece.
When Johann Sebastian Bach wrote his Klavierübung 3, the Great Organ Mass, he didn't keep the prelude and fugue together, but instead used them as the bookends of the service, as the prelude and the postlude, if you will. Let's hear them performed as a set by organist Wim van Beek.
Thank you.
Wim van Beek was the organist in that performance of the St. Anne Prelude and Fugue, BWV 552 by Bach, which he used as the bookends of his great organ mass, the Klavierübung 3. That music, especially the fugue, is a great example of Bach's contrapuntal skills. With me today on the 3Bs is Ton Koopman, one of the great organists in the period music circle. Ton, how did Bach become such a great contrapuntal writer?
Yeah, I think it's tradition as well. He came from a tradition. He came from a family. There were many, many Bachs around him, and there were great composers under them. Get lessons with people. Bach, as you know from the story, when his both parents died before he was 10 years old, mm-hmm. and he went to his elderly brother, and he copied by night pieces, because one of the things to learn your profession at that time was to copy things, mm-hmm. and to learn by copying. Bach, like many composers from his time, were knowing well the generation before, looked at that music and looked what they could learn there and could use for their own pieces. When you see Bach in his young years, you see all kind of influence, if it's Vivaldi, if it's Albinoni, all kind of influences are coming there, and he's like an omnivore, he's eating all those tastes mm-hmm. together, and out of that there comes something out which is unbelievable.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Well-Tempered Clavier before we move too far away from it. How did all of those preludes and fugues get to be so famous and so well known? Because they're nothing particularly big.
No, I think the Wilhelmus Clavier, the preludes were composed for his son, Willem Friedemann particularly, as exercises to learn to play the harpsichord. And at some point, we don't know when, but we know the date of the Wilhelmus Clavier, of course, Bach decided to add fugues there. Maybe that was a part of the education process. And maybe you heard that when the library of the Singakademie in Berlin, a library that had disappeared since the Second World War, when it was found back by Christoph Wolff and in Riga, and it came back in Germany, they found inside a few pages where Johann Sebastian Bach is teaching his son, Willem Friedemann Bach, contrapoint. And they sit at the kitchen table, Bach gives an exercise, and Willem Friedemann makes it, not completely perfect, Bach with his red pencil is correcting things, and then Willem Friedemann gives Bach something, Bach, no mistake. And so it goes on. I think the playing, the learning to compose, learn to play, things were as well done like a little play for a kid, and I'm certain Bach did that way, and other people in Bach's time did the same way. So the Wilhelmus Clavier, smaller pieces, were ideal pieces to learn to play the harpsichord, to learn to compose those pieces, and they became famous. Not all, many of them became famous because they are lovely miniatures, sometimes of great thoughts. When you think of the E flat minor in the first book, for instance. And we know that many of the pieces were by Bach composed in different tonalities. Later transposed them to have pieces in all tonalities.
What was so important about having pieces in all the tonalities?
Because in Bach's time, the temperament of an organ, of a harpsichord, was not as limited anymore as it was in the 17th century. You could play in all keys, but it was not an equal temperament, but a temperament where one key was better, one harmony was sounding much more in tune than another one. And Bach uses that when he was composing those pieces, so that you really could discover all the new tonalities, which were very rarely used by other composers before him. And so I think it has all to do with maybe as well he had fun in composing in all those different tonalities and using it. But as well, it was for teaching purposes as well important that people got to use those difficult tonalities with many sharps, many flats, and double sharps, to get to learn to play in it, to get to learn to read them.
I found a CD of you playing the Well-Tempered Clavier. Let's hear the E-flat minor prelude and fugue from the book one. Thank you. Tund Kotman, my guest for this morning's edition of the Epic Bach Week on the Three Bs, gave that performance of the Prelude and Fugue in E-flat minor from the first book of the Well-Tempered Clavier. There are about half a dozen large-scale works by Bach that some people think were written as compilations, almost like an encyclopedia. Works like the Art of the Fugue, the B minor Mass, and the Well-Tempered Clavier. Ton, do you think that he intended them to be a guide to that sort of composition, or do you think that that was just how it ended up?
Now, with Bach, everything is possible because he was such a brilliant composer, such a genius person, and such a clever person as well, that you can imagine that at some point he just thought, that would be a nice idea to do that, to write Prelude and Fugues in different tonalities. For us, liking this idea of encyclopedial works, Bach makes it easy.
One of the stories told about one of these large-scale works by Bach, the Musical Offering, tells that Frederick II of Prussia asked Bach to improvise a three-voice fugue on a particular theme that he wrote using a very early piano. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Bach came to Potsdam and was invited by Frederick the Great to improvise on a fortepiano. And the discussion is always, did Bach like the fortepiano? Anyhow, it was not a Steinway, but a completely different instrument. Mm-hmm. But it's sure that he improvised on this theme for Frederick the Great. And then after it coming back, he composed the work and sent it back to Frederick the Great as a present. And he gave it within 2 weeks to his sister Amalia, who was a student of Kirnberger, and was in love with music of Bach and had nothing to do with piano, but just with harpsichord. Because Bach composed at the end a work for harpsichord and not for piano. Mm-hmm. Because contrapoint is against piano, I feel. And even against an old piano, it's so well written for harpsichord that maybe it was a little criticism of Bach as well.
The rest of that story of its composition is that Bach was given the king's theme and wrote out the work on a piece of manuscript paper without ever even touching an instrument. It is said that Bach was able to tell the king exactly how long the work needed to be before even beginning. He even went so far as to write a few measures of the alto line in the very middle of the work. Have you heard that story, and do you know if it's true?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, those are all stories where I don't know where the basic of this story, of this legend is coming from. I never heard that, but it's certain that Bach, a composer so well in contrapoint, could know exactly what with a theme is possible and as well say something about dimensions of a piece. I'm certain that's true. But that it happened with with this work, no, I don't believe it.
Well, whether or not Bach actually could sit down and write the work without ever touching a keyboard, the Musical Offering does an amazing job at showing Bach's creativity with a single short subject. Let's hear the three-voice fugue that we've been talking a little bit about, performed on the harpsichord by Gustav Leonhardt. Thank you. Gustav Leonhardt gave that performance of the opening fugue for three voices from the musical offering by Bach. A lot of the research that I have done has alluded to the fact that the Art of the Fugue is the last thing that Bach wrote, but I understand that your research has led you to other conclusions. Can you share them with us?
The last major work he wrote was the B minor Mass. If you look at the autograph of Bach, you see in the B minor Mass, his hand is not stable anymore. If you look at the other fugue, you see that the hand is very stable. We know in this moment that Bach didn't write after 1743 on the Art of Fugue, and that he was just copying the work. It was not composing. The work was done. He was just copying it to write it in neat writing that you could read it well, and maybe then to send it to the publisher. And that didn't happen because on the moment when Bach was working on this, he had all kind of troubles in Leipzig, and he decided that it was better to do now something to survive. The basic, the score was there, so any time he could do that, so there was no need to do it. And then he finished the B minor Mass, and you see that the hand is slowly starting to shake. So that's the last work he worked on, he composed.
To close out our program this morning, let's hear an excerpt from the unfinished movement of Bach's Art of the Fugue, one of the many things that made me think that this was his final work. We hear it performed by Reinhard Goebel, Hajo Bess, and Phoebe Carré. Heard just a short excerpt from one of Bach's final works, The Art of the Fugue, BWV 1080. That excerpt was from the final movement, which is left unfinished in the score. Thank you so much, Tan Koopman, for joining me on the 3Bs this morning and for chatting about the keyboard music of Johann Sebastian Bach. The next time you're in the U.S., I invite you to stop by and give us an organ recital on the Anton Heiler organ, John Brombaugh's Opus 26. You can also bring the whole Amsterdam Baroque Orchestra and chorus. I just know my listeners would love a chance to hear and see you perform. So be sure next time you're in the area to come through for a concert.
I promise that I will do this with great fun to do that. And I would say thank you very much for the nice interview we did. And I'm off to the Bach competition.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And thank you for joining Tan Koopman and myself for this special edition of the 3Bs. This whole week, we're focusing on the music of J.S. Bach with the Epic Bach Week. Today, we focused on the keyboard music of Bach. You won't want to miss tomorrow's edition when we'll talk to Bruce Ashton about Bach, the church musician. Until then, be sure to keep your radio dial set to Classical 90.5. Performance today begins at noon. Until tomorrow, I hope you have a wonderful day.